Oh, hey, Kate.
You can learn a lot of things from the flowers in the merry, merry month of June. Ooh. Hi.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
I am exhausted.
What? Why?
I think it's just a very different level of output to be back in the teaching this much game. It's a lot. Which is also coupled with, like, now I actually have to, like, commute. Which I had to do before, just not nearly as much.
I love it. I mean, I'm commuting from fucking... And yeah. To be fair, I'm only doing it once a week, but I love it. I love settling in with NPR.
Oh, I love it, too. I'm not so much looking forward to it with whatever weird slush is falling from the sky today.
Yeah, that's true. So I've gone through our text exchange. The first thing I just want to talk about is I sound really nasally because I am. Because me and everybody else has a cold. This is what we do. But yeah. I was thinking about it during teaching this last week. I've been teaching three in a row, which I have started to love. I'm not going to keep that up because I don't think it's going to be allowed. But
yeah.
I have been enjoying it because it's a heated flow, slow flow, and then restorative. So it's like this slow motion decrescendo.
Yeah. Anyone come for all three?
No, no, no.
Okay.
Some people stay from slow flow to restorative, but or some people will go to the heated. Hmm. I've seen a couple of people do heated and then take a break and then come back for restorative. They'll like go shower. Not a bunch though. But it was interesting because I was teaching restorative and I was like a little nasally at the beginning of class, but nothing major. And then by the end of class, it was just like I full blown sick. And it was funny because the class could hear it. Like all of a sudden I couldn't, like when you're so congested that you can't talk. Well, you can talk, but like that it changes the embouchure of your mouth.
Yeah.
So it was like every word I was like, I'm not saying
the teacher from Charlie Brown teaching her story.
Oh, yeah, no, it was straight up gross. And like, and you know, we did our sit up and then we did not say namaste. Class was over. And then I said, yeah. And like halfway through that class, I got sick, guys. Apologize for that. And like everybody started laughing because it was like so clear to them that that's what had happened. But anyways,
just real quick, we should turn our video off.
Oh, but I like watching you.
I like watching you too, but
could we have found a creepier way to say that?
Yes, I'm sure that we could.
I like watching you. All right, I'm gonna turn it off.
Okay.
Here we are. So, kink and BDSM.
Okay, so that's where we're going today.
Oh.
Proceed.
So, I've been thinking a lot about ropes and Iyengar.
Okay.
And I've also been thinking about, like, BDSM kink culture and how it's available in new ways through social media. And the reason this comes up is because last night my daughter Frankie woke up really like I put her to bed, and then a few hours later she was like, Mom, and I was like, all right, sleepover time. So we had a sleepover. And she fell asleep in like a super weird position. Like she was a parrot on my shoulder and then fell asleep. That's how the arrangement of our bodies was. It was funny. But I wasn't yet fully asleep. So I was scrolling through Instagram with my parrot daughter sleeping on my shoulder. And somebody that I follow on Instagram was doing like a live lecture with a friend on polyamory and BDSM as a therapeutic approach to different kinds of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hi, I'm late to the party. So I went down that rabbit hole last night and gave myself a fucking associate's degree in it. But it really is interesting, and I just kept thinking as I was learning more and more about restraint culture, it's like, what the hell are we doing in ropes? You know, it's all about creating sensation in the body in a container.
Sure.
And wait, you sound already suspicious, and I don't like that. I need on board.
No, I am all on board. I just don't necessarily, except for in a very superficial way, see what this has to do with, like, you're talking about what it has to do with ropes in yoga?
Yeah, it has everything to do with ropes in yoga.
I don't know about that. I mean,
it doesn't have everything, but if we have a Venn diagram, you cannot tell me that there isn't.
Okay, okay.
And I'm just talking about that area in between.
Okay.
Let's talk about it. So tell me, let's back up for a second. Talk to me about ropes and yoga.
Okay. Whether it's ropes or straps or like whatever type of contraption a studio has in order to do these things, there are some really useful traction positions that the ropes can provide for folks. But then there's also like a lot of party tricks. And I actually find that there are, okay, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, I would say there's only probably about 9 or 10 specific exercises that I use the ropes for in my own practice that I find to be beneficial. And everything else is just like a interesting party trick in my mind. Of course, for people with other particular types of bodies and other particular types of issues going on, there may be other things that that might be helpful. But, you know, there's a lot that can be done with just those 10-ish, I might be miscounting, but 10-ish exercises. But primarily the benefit is that they're either giving traction to some part of the body, because you're holding on and letting your body weight fall away, or the ropes are holding your legs so that your spine can release, allowing you to be upside down for a longer period of time without necessarily having to put pressure on your head or upper extremities. And then in a almost like TRX type of way, there are some sort of pulling and exercises that can be useful, especially because we don't do a lot of the pulling action in yoga. So that's what I find the value to be. And most of what I've learned from the rope on the rope wall has been from Allison West, who's a teacher in New York City, whose studio is actually sort of dedicated to sort of back care, scoliosis, herniation, working with folks who are dealing with those type of issues.
Okay.
Was that not the answer that you wanted? 'Cause...
Yeah, it's just playing with toys.
Yeah, but it's also playing with toys.
In a container for sensation, traction, you know, and like feeling your internal experience in a new way. So TRX could be kink, is what I'm saying.
Well, no. I think you have to draw a little bit of a line there because, you know.
I will not. Fine, you draw the line.
I think a big part of the line is simply in intention. I do think that one of the, you know, when I'm using the ropes for yoga purposes, I'm still very much within the realm of yoga, asana. And that whenever I've engaged with like a BDSM community, like it's definitely for a different set of sensations that, and dynamics that are being explored.
Sure. But those sensations, the act of noticing them, arguably.
No, I'm not saying there's not overlap. I'm just... It's not, the overlap is more, internal.
Oh, they're both internal. They're both deeply internal. So let's turn the conversation on its head a little bit. How is restraint and... what is it called? Shimari? I screwed that up. I don't know. Where they
the
tie.
The Japanese rope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, how is that specifically not yoga?
Well, it would depend on the people engaging in that practice.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, same thing with like your average vinyasa class.
No, totally. But if the people who are doing the if the people who are doing the restraining would have a context for yoga and they are performing and engaging in those activities with that as the context, then yes. But if they're not, then it's not, you can't call it yoga.
I see. I'm sort of just in a place now where I think you can. And I think that people don't necessarily have to know that they're practicing yoga to be practicing yoga.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a slippery slope. I think.
Oh, let's go. Let's slide.
Because it's not just like, it's like when people say like, knitting is my yoga, blah, blah, blah is my yoga. And it's like, just because you're engaged with something in a way that might give you some of the benefits with yoga that other people get from yoga, I should say, doesn't necessarily mean that it's yoga. But if yoga is primarily concerned with, for lack of a better word, the human condition, then yes, there are aspects in other practices that are going to be unlocked. And when you get into realms of subspace and dominance, yeah, there's going to be some somatic overlap that starts to happen. Not certainly that would happen hopefully in a group yoga class, but you know, yeah, there's going to be some stuff that comes up.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I'm just pointing to the fact that there are many interesting somatic practices that can be explored through a yogic context, and yogic principles can be applied to them. And the reason I bring that up is because you and I were talking earlier this week about how sometimes we were both sort of joking about how, you know, has a practice of yoga just made it so that we can watch a slow motion nervous breakdown happen?
I mean, that's...
Do you know, and the reason I the reason I'm making this connection is because, yeah, I believe that there can become a moment of a brick wall in a yoga practice where the practice is telling you to take it into a different place, to do something different, to leave it as you understand it now so that you can return to it again in a different form. Life is long if you're lucky. And I think yoga, as we understand it, can really lead to a lot of navel gazing. So applying some of the quote unquote therapeutic and useful techniques and philosophies to another modality, I think, has a lot of potential for evolution and for healing and for moving forward. And the place where that light bulb went off for me was when I was listening to these women talk about reclaiming somatic experience through some BDSM stuff, which, you know, on the surface at first I was like, what? No. I had multiple pearl clutch moments. And then I, you know, sort of sat with that and I was like, well, how is this different than blah, blah. And of course it's different in many ways, but the overlaps are significant and profound. Mm-hmm. And I just bring it up because I think sometimes when we start practicing yoga into decade number two, it's like, hey, I get the fuck outside and get the stink blown off you and do something different. I'm not saying abandon the practice. I'm just saying let it change or take the practice into other modalities, grow. Get the fuck out of the studio. Get the fuck out of your asana as you understand it.
Yes. but then that also is like gets into the whole like, okay, now we're going to have like all, I agree with you, but then I quickly see that becoming in the yoga world just like the next capitalistic thing that we're selling is these like alternative somatic practices. So it's like, yes, people need to be, or not need to, but like I think it is a natural evolution for people to explore like, okay, well, you know, this asana vocabulary is not necessarily serving me anymore, so let me explore some other movement modalities where I can find the... So, yes, I think that's very, very natural. I think the thing where it gets, like, tricky is the selling it.
Well, that's why I'm not selling it.
Yeah.
I'm saying eventually you walk away from the capitalist paradigm of receiving a class and maybe you go out into the woods and do movement as you understand it and tie yourself up and get fucked. Like,
wow. I think the wheels have officially come off.
Absolutely not. The wheels finally are on.
Okay. I'll take that too. That's great.
No, I'm not lit. I mean, yeah, if that's how it, you know, if that's what your heart wants, go do it. I'm just saying at some point you're employed with the tools and the freedom to explore them in your body in your lifetime in a way that is both innovative and free, truly free. Yeah. And then, you know, come back to a class when you need that container.
Sure. And I also go back and forth about whether or not I don't know, like there's I don't even know how to phrase this. Like I don't, because there's not really a venue to like actively learn that is as accessible anymore. Not that it was that accessible, but like now it, like you have to pay $3,000 up front to get education in yoga. Yes, there might be a time to leave the practice, the asana, specifically the asana practice behind. And it might also be that there were some deep misunderstandings ingrained into how we learn the asana practice that might also make it useful again later on. And whether that unlearning comes from just different viewpoint of yoga, or whether that unlearning comes from going to another modality and like shaking things up a little bit, I think is fine. But I've seen enough people cycle back around that it's not really just like a throwing away of the practice. And then I've seen people just sort of leave asana practice altogether because it doesn't work for their bodies, or it doesn't, like, they just find something else that serves them better. But if they are still holding that, whatever they're doing, within the context of yoga, then it's not like they're throwing the yoga practices away. It's just they're not practicing asana in the way that, you know, it has become known to be practiced in this modern day. Which some might argue is not that different from the history and trajectory of yoga more broadly. As she slams the coffee mug down on the table.
I don't know. I think I'm just on the... I'm on the verge of... really questioning, you know, I'm always in
on the verge of really questioning.
It's so amazing, like I feel so conflicted, and I actually try not to think about it that much because I got other shit to do. I gotta like fucking put her, you know, I gotta put food on the table and a roof. But I love the practice. I do. And I use the practice, and I have a practice, and it's private, and it's weird, and it is what it is, and it frames my understanding of being alive. So it is fundamental and profound for me. So let me be clear. This isn't me discarding the practice. This is me, like, I'm just at a point where I think it's, I feel like shame about contributing in some ways to the ways in which I do, to the parts of the practice that I don't like.
Yeah. Well, what are the parts of the practice that you don't like?
I don't like that I am... I don't like encouraging people to take more public classes than they need. Or I don't like the insinuation that more public classes means you're better at yoga. You know, I want to empower people to do it on their own. And sometimes it takes a whole bunch of public classes before you feel like you can do that, you know? But I question that vehicle.
Yes. And that, to me, that's what you don't like about the culture of the practice. That isn't what you don't like about the practice.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, yeah, the if I could snap my fingers tomorrow, buy a building and just have a room that's open for practice all day long, some periods more structured than others, with a library of resources for people to utilize when they're there, yeah, I would do that. But I have no money, I'm broke, and I'm in debt, and I will teach some public yoga classes now to make up for that. But, like, that's a hard reality for me to wrap my brain around, that, like, these next couple of years will assuredly be about me making up for the windfall of spending the last 4 years trying to do the best I could to steer a studio that already existed towards what I wanted it to be. And I've been reflecting on this a lot, that I wouldn't change anything, but I think what was difficult was that, like, when I took over Bow Street, I had just, like, formally started studying with Tom. I had been, you know, working with him for years before that, just sort of, like, as I needed help with practice, but the same month that I took over Bow Street was the same month that I started, like, really every week going in there and studying. And so I didn't really have a clear picture of what my practice was. So it was hard to mold. Like, everyone kept telling me, I had, like, a lot of people in my life saying, like, don't try to keep it the same. Like, it's better to take this moment to, like, mold it into exactly what you wanted it to be. And I didn't do that, partially because I didn't know what I wanted it to be. So I just kind of had to work with what the paradigm was. And I'm really happy with where it went. And I'm happy with where I am now. Do I think the culture, including the model in which we're, you know, for lack of a better word, selling yoga, is incredibly broken and unsustainable? Yes, I do. And it's broken and unsustainable on many fronts. It's broken and unsustainable on a like purely financial business front. It's broken and unsustainable on a I guess I'll just say on a, like, social and cultural front. Like, just the fact that I know that there are going to be people that cringe that we talk about BDSM on the podcast, which, like, if they're legitimate, you know, if that is a legitimate trigger for somebody, like, that's totally fine. And I will, in fact, maybe put a little bit of a, something in the show notes just to acknowledge that.
Wait, but, because I said the word?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's people that are, like, legitimately sort of disturbed, and then there's the, like, as I've been archiving the episodes, I found an episode entitled Puritan Backwash. And I think there's a lot of that too, that just pervades the yoga world.
Yeah, I don't know that simply bringing up a word needs a trigger warning, because we might as well put a trigger warning on every episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, trigger warning.
But I mean, it is, like, I am acknowledging that it is a sensitive subject, because I have had both mildly traumatizing experiences in exploring that community, and also really, like, transformative healing experiences.
Uh-huh.
You know, wouldn't want to impose either end of that spectrum on anyone, especially because, like, as with anything, the one negative experience seems to be, like, always is slightly louder in my memory than the, like, many transformative and healing experiences. And I think it's
very
Go ahead.
We haven't spoken about anything specifically except referencing that it exists. So yeah. I don't know that that is
more
triggering. I don't know. This is because I was born in 1981 and have just a little bit of Gen X in me.
That's fair.
That's how I laugh now. Okay, there was another thing I wanted to talk about. Let's veer away from this. Because it's making me sad.
Why is it making you sad?
I don't know. Just because everybody's a mess. Everybody's suffering.
Yes, in fact, that is the point of yoga practice. Is that everybody is in fact suffering.
What did I want to tell you? Oh, there were so many topics. And I'm scared about all of them.
Fantastic. That means we should talk about them. I mean, we've already talked about BDSM, so we might as well dive into whatever else is...
Oh, I wanted to ask you, how is training going?
There was a... situation, which I think I texted you about, where yes. In the first session that I came, or the second session that I came in, he just sat down and did this whole spiel on nutrition, and I have never been so triggered and angry in my entire life. I was just sitting there like livid the whole time, and it basically came down to counting calories, which like for someone with disordered eating, like even if it's counting calories to consume more of them is like not it's gonna trigger the same old stuff. And it's like, and I like actually remember sitting in that session and being like, oh fuck, am I 15 again right now? Like what is happening? like it was a little too much. And he also couldn't like find the agency in the entire hour to be like, this is not okay. This is not what I agreed to. And just left there feeling like shit.
So that's the thing. What's going on with personal trainers and like dietary advice like that? Can you
it was something about like in order to match the something about like my metabolic output, which is he's just determining based on anecdotal evidence, based on what I tell him that I do every day. And I think sometimes people like think that when I'm teaching a yoga class that I'm like
jumping around.
Yeah.
Yep. Everyone I talk to is like, you must be exhausted physically. And I'm like,
nope.
No.
Emotionally. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Vocally and cerebrally fucking wiped. Psychically empty, but physically I could run a marathon.
And because I was very, very clear that like I just want to feel comfortable coming in here and being able to do some light weight training, because it's not something that I've ever done before, and like I could get one of those like apps or something like that, and do that, but like I value people's one-on-one time, and that's how I learn best. So I was like, okay, let me try this. And but when I think he may have got the message, because I went in there yesterday and I was working with a different trainer, and we actually like went around and it was instructional. Like, this is how we do a bench press. Let's see how you do. This is how we deadlift. Let's see how you do. This is how we squat.
Oh, wait
Let's see
a
how
minute.
you
So
do.
let me just hear this out. You scheduled with a different trainer?
Yes.
And he saw you?
Yes.
Did you have an awkward lock eye moment?
No, there wasn't an awkward like eye moment. I think he got the message.
Did you say in the beginning, I'm not interested in like dietary advice, or
I
did you
thought
just
I
not see it
did, but
coming?
I thought that I had said that. But I guess, like, I think this is the disconnect. I think a lot of people go in there saying, like, I want to look a certain way. And I'm just saying, I do very, very specific repetitive things with my body. And I think that doing some light work with weights would be helpful, especially as I age. And I would like to know how to do that safely and effectively. That's all. I don't think that's a huge ask. And I just need to know enough to like go out on my own. That's all. I don't need to like lift a million pounds. I don't need like. And it's just good to learn to do something different with your body. So even if I don't do any of this in 6 months, I at least had the like nervous system like challenge of being like, this is a mildly heavy weight. I'm going to figure out how to lift it now and get everything to fire in a way that feels comfortable and okay. And yeah. So it was very interesting. Like yesterday was fine and wonderful, and I'm incredibly sore, which I have not felt
Yes.
sore in Lord knows how long. But the previous week was like, fuck you. I was really pissed. So that's how that's going. That's how that's going.
You do bring up an interesting point, though, of like overstepping.
The agreement.
Yeah. And I think that's something that happens with yoga teachers too. It happens in a lot of different places, not just yoga, where like the natural extension of moving your body is feeling it. So now I get to hear about fucking, how so and so is not, doesn't have dairy anymore and feels amazing. And
Yeah.
don't know, because it's not that I want to censor people. I just wish people thought about the intimacy of food and
Yeah.
when they conjure it is really powerful. I'm not saying don't talk about it. It's just, I think to be really critical of your own
Yeah.
relationship with food can be a useful thought exercise. Like, what do you think is right and good and pure and valuable and correct and
Yeah.
why? And have you thought about the larger context with which you're able to feed yourself?
Yes.
Are you able to afford things that enable you to sustain dietary habits that is untenable for maybe another group of people.
Yeah.
Are you rich enough to be fucking
Yeah.
skinny is like the subtext here. Are you rich enough to look the way you want to look? Are you rich enough to look the way you want to look?
Yeah.
Oh, and then I wanted to talk about J-Lo for a hot second.
Just a hard swipe left there.
You watched the
What?
Super Bowl, I assume. I assume you were
No, I did not.
I assume you were watching the Super Bowl.
I assuredly did not. I avoided I went out to dinner with a friend of mine, specifically in a restaurant that had no TVs so that we could avoid
Yeah.
the Super Bowl.
I avoided it too, but I watched the halftime show, not live, but later. And it's...
I did not, so I'm ill-equipped for this conversation.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do while I talk about it. Pull it up and watch it. It's like 7 minutes long. Anyways, you can even just watch the first minute or two, and that's sufficient. First minute, really. Just watch 30 seconds. Turn it on. That's all you need. It's J-Lo's vagina dancing, and it's amazing. It's beautiful. She's wonderful. And, like, I had several thoughts. First was, I'm so happy this is so, like, cunt-centric. It was an aesthetic homage to the vulva. Like, even her outfit circumvented her vagina, like, in a really interesting cutout pattern that dance move after dance move sort of pointed to the vagina. In a way that I thought was like kind of edgy and I didn't hear people talking about very much, but it was there. It also, all of her choreography, besides being centered around her vagina, was also centered around the narrative of her ass. And J-Lo's history, you know, has been like a J-Lo booty. You know, let's talk about it, but it's a booty like J-Lo. And then I realized her booty is no longer large. And it's not that the size of her ass has changed. It's that our cultural measuring stick for an acceptably sized ass has shifted. Like, you're allowed and encouraged to have a gigantic ass now, as long as it is paired with a small waist.
So I'm watching. I'm in the midst of Shakira right now.
About. But did you see what I was saying about the vagina thing in the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. So, It just made me think, like, she was doing a couple dance moves that were meant to, like, highlight her J-Lo booty. And I remember thinking, yeah, that, like, doesn't look that big now compared to a lot of other performers who have large butts. And isn't that exciting that J-Lo's butt is now kind of average? Like, oh, okay, you know. But then the conversation has turned toward, isn't it amazing that she looks and can move like that at age 50. And on the one hand, yeah, it's great. It's great that she's active and can dance like that and can look the way I assume she wants to look at age 50, which, you know, some people were putting up pictures of the Golden Girls and
Blanche, I saw, you know, that one. Like,
Blanche is 50 and so is J-Lo and this is the new 50, and part of me thought, okay, well, you know, the downside of that is now the onus is on women to stay young until the grave, so you better stay fucking fuckable until your last breath. You're never allowed to not look 27.
Yeah.
So yay, J-Lo. I thought you did great. And I thought that there were some really cool and subversive political statements being made in that performance. And I was really excited about that. But then, like, for us to kind of focus on her being 50 years old and looking so hot, it's like, it's because she can afford to. If she's got like a team of people whose full-time job is to, you know, feed her and train her and keep her body looking that way. So that's not something that we should be foisting on the average 50-year-old woman who's got other concerns, you know, like, you know, 50 years old. We got a lot of 50-year-olds who are raising teenagers, you know, like, and they got shit to do and are, like, being mistreated at work and underpaid and, like, you know. So it's complicated, you know, and there's something to be celebrated in staying active and joyful and taking – being able to move around and be sensual and be sexual throughout your life if that's what you wish. But the aesthetic – double-edged sort of that is, yeah, you better do it because look, J-Lo did it. So you better look good and that body better be slamming till you're
home. Till you're, yeah. I just did a speed through watch of it.
And it
I do hear you that meme that was going around with the one I saw was Blanche Devereaux and J-Lo. I was like, okay, yeah, that's like mildly funny, but then also like 50 can look like whatever the fuck 50 is gonna look like for somebody, and that is, you know, we're looking here at two people with a lot of money and a lot of you know, but it does seem like the standard does get cranked up.
What can you afford? You know,
Yeah.
can you afford to live a stress-free life? Your skin is gonna look different than somebody that
Yeah.
has different stressors. And that's the part that is just like heartbreaking to me.
Yeah. Was there another topic that we were going to dive into? I
I
feel
don't
like
know.
there was.
I think that's what I'm wrestling with is I think that a lot of the people that I work with are affluent. And I think I'm struggling with that a little bit.
Yeah. No, I struggle with that too. I mean, there's definitely like, you know, even I've been in a few situations recently where, just in like social situations where there were a lot of the like, you know, 22 to 26, like first job out of undergrad or grad school, you know, consulting type crowd, and just like making more money than. I mean, honestly, probably still not enough money to sustain, but certainly more money than any yoga teacher could ever expect to make in a given year. And both the like age difference and the just like their relationship with what they were wanted to do with their lives. Like, I remember there was a conversation where everyone was talking about where they wanted to move to, where they wanted to relocate to, and like it was no like. In their minds, like, oh, I could just move anywhere. It's fine. I can afford it. And like where they were gonna go on vacation and where they were like, and I was just like, you know. And there was part of me that was like, y'all come back and talk to me when in 6 years you're so burnt out. And in a yoga teacher training that I'm participating in and wanting a change for your life. Like, this, it is like, I don't want to be that person because, like, maybe they love what they do and they're going to do that forever. They're going to fly all over the world and just be a consultant. And my favorite thing when I meet those folks is you ask them, okay, but, like, so what does that mean? No one has ever been able to answer me. My brother is the only person who's been ever able to answer. He goes, I plug numbers into spreadsheets, and that's about it. I was like, okay, at least that's honest.
Wait a minute. To be a consultant is plugging numbers into spreadsheets?
Yes, they all have their like proprietary spreadsheets that they use to analyze a company's whatever, and.
Synthesize the data,
Yes, indeed.
metabolize it into deliverable KPIs.
Jesus Christ. But anyways, like it is striking because it's not that I'm I mean, my overhead is not that great, because I don't have a child and I don't like, I have help. Like, I'm fine. I'm doing fine. And sometimes I'm in, it's like such a different context for livelihood than other folks have sometimes that it creates these like awkward moments of like, oh yeah, I don't really get vacation. I don't I'm gonna take one maybe if I can afford it, like, probably not.
I have actually just started a bank account or a savings account because I realized I can't like take a vacation unless, you know, I've like it. It's just sort of the being. Yes, I understand. Because when it's not sort of built into the architecture of your job to get one,
yeah, yeah,
get vacation time like that, you have to like say, okay, well, I need to take this much money out of my yearly income to cover,
yes,
you know, a week of not working.
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just I'm having an interesting, well, interesting to me in that. Oh, I you know, it's hard. I think the moment came because I was teaching a class, and afterwards, I don't know how much I can talk about. I'm going to keep it very anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm trying like to be mindful about whether or not this is an okay thing to talk about. I'm going to go with yeah. Okay.
What a surprise.
Okay. You know, somebody had misplaced something, and yeah, that something that they had misplaced was very expensive. And the concern was that somebody else had taken it thinking it was theirs and left their cheaper version.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just, I was thinking about it. And, you know, they were talking about how much that thing had cost, but not in a sense of, it was one of the first times in a while I had been like, wow, I can't imagine. I can't imagine, but it feels really far away being somebody that bought something at that price. And then,
yeah.
It's not an envy thing because I didn't want it, but it was just like we had just come out of this class, and I thought that material possessions. I'm in the middle of a no spend February. Let's pivot. I'm in the middle of no spend February, mm-hmm, and it's fun and hard, and it's forcing me to, you know, look at what I buy and what I spend money on. And of course I have a daughter. So, you know, yes, I'm buying food. If any of you are furiously dialing fucking the authorities. so I have a budget that covers groceries.
Yeah.
And my bills. So I pay my bills and I pay for groceries, but everything else, no, I'm just not doing for the month. Anything that costs money. So I'm like going to free library things. I'm going to free events everywhere. And, I don't have to do this. It's not, I mean, kind of have to do it, but like I'm doing it more because I think it's important to hit the reset button on consumption.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have what we need. I'm lucky to have what I need in my possession already. And, you know, stopping buying the random coffee here and there, or, you know, whatever stupid little fucking thing, you know, you think you need, or even just like scrolling online and being like, ooh, maybe I do need this face lotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, I'm so guilty of all of that, of like, you know, therapeutic shopping. And even if it's like cool companies independently owned by,
yeah,
you know, I really want to examine it because I think it is so ugly.
Yeah.
The culture of of buying expensive brand name things is just one I think is just so toxic. And then, you know, the intersection of that with yoga and yoga, public yoga classes, and like who can afford them and who's invited there and what they're wearing when they come in.
Yeah.
And, you know, even like the water bottles, I'm just like, I'm just starting to feel like I don't know, Ryan, but it's becoming more uncomfortable than it's been historically to like be who I am and what I value in this context, because I almost feel like what I share in a classroom is just sort of an abrupt anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like,
abrupt anomaly in terms of,
like, I want to live this way. I don't just want to visit it.
Okay. What, like, what do you mean live this way?
Like, filterless and honest.
Yeah.
As I can.
Yeah.
You know? And I wonder, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I'll have more clarity on that in time. I think I'm just going through some really interesting transitions right now with my life and property and money and like food, and all of it is like up in the air for and subject to inspection. And that includes my job and my livelihood and students that come to my class. I mean, all of it is.
Yeah.
Have I made any sense, or did I?
No. You're making sense. I mean, I think about this all the time, and it's very, and I think it used to be more, what's the word I'm looking for? I think it used to feel more charged, because I think I used to have more of a doubt that if I didn't do this, that I would, like, if I didn't teach, that I would lose interest in practicing. And now I'm, like, more and more very confident that, like, it's actually quite the opposite. If, like, something came along that was, like, a job that I could stand, and, you know, covered all of my bases and also allowed me time to, you know, practice the way that I want to practice every morning, I'd have to seriously consider it. I'd have to really seriously consider it. You know, I don't know that such a job exists. I would be kind of doubtful that it does, but, yeah, but I think when it was more, when those two things felt more conjoined, practice and teaching, that was kind of like a constant worry. And now it's very clear that, no, I'm going to be thinking about this stuff and practicing this stuff, whether or not anyone shows up to class. And then the thing that makes, honestly, the thing that then just makes the teaching stressful is just the money. It's like, is there going to be, you know, is there going to be enough? And that feeling of, and there's both the feeling of, you know, things will unfold as they unfold. And I do have some faith in that, like, there's enough of a support structure in my life that if anything, like, shit hits the fan, that I'm not going to be, you know, out on the street. But that that this is all a big, like, fluke in a manner of speaking. Like, the fact that as young as I was able to get a job at a big, successful yoga studio, manage it, teach it, teach there, run the teacher trainings, then go and take over another yoga studio, realize that that wasn't working, and then be able to seamlessly transition to another big studio. Like, in many ways, like, I just reflect on the fact, like, this is a fluke. This is just a giant coincidence. And I'm really grateful for it. And that if it went away, that I'd figure something out. And that the livelihood conversation is different than the conversation that I'm having with myself about practice and why that's important. They're hard to pry apart, and they're not fully isolatable, but
the separation
is necessary. Otherwise, I get to observe myself have a slow nervous breakdown, which is one of the benefits of yoga
is our ability to watch the great unraveling.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a spectacular luxury, the art of navel gazing.
Yes.
I know it's more than that, but so Trump was acquitted. That's great. Apparently you can just do whatever the fuck you want if you're a white dude.
Apparently.
Sorry, that was my way of tying back in to the, what was his name? Mark Whitwell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it either. Can I talk about what's going on with Unrolled more generally?
Yes, do it.
Okay, so I am feverishly putting the first 100 episodes into an archive, and this will hopefully be live by the time this episode posts next week. There will be an opportunity to support the podcast, because what I am trying to do, what we're trying to do, is get paid for the podcast, quite frankly. We've done 120 some odd episodes, and at the end of last year, I began paying folks for their time, including ourselves, showing up and recording the podcast. And you are more than welcome to go to ryanyoga.com and support with a monthly subscription. All of the recent episodes will still be free on the feed, and then as soon as the site goes live, the first 100 episodes will go behind the paywall, so only people who are subscribing will get access to that. And then they will also get access to a library of audio classes that I have on my website, as well as any what will hopefully be an increasing library of content and practice resources for folks to practice at home. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean more audio or video full-length classes. I mean more just sort of videos that contain ideas and concepts and things to explore, so that people can start to feel less reliant on necessarily having someone constantly need to talk them through. Ooh. Through a practice.
Yeah, yeah!
So... so that will hopefully be going live next week. I'm still finalizing the pricing structure, but as with most things, there'll be a ability to do a monthly or a yearly payment, and we're just asking folks to keep in mind that in order to do one podcast and pay folks for the work they do on the podcast, both Kate, myself, and any other host that we have. It does cost about $100 an episode between the website, the hosting, and paying the people. I would love to have your support, and we will commit to putting out at least 24 episodes in the course of 2020. And if we can get more support than what we need to cover that, then we can commit in 2021 to expanding the amount of episodes and the amount of content that we can put up on my website. So that'll all be live. And next week or the week after, just it takes a long time to individually archive each of the previous episodes, though I'm having a lovely time going back and listening to clips of old episodes, including the, Kate, do you remember the sake episode?
Oh my God, what? No.
that commercial that Yoga Journal did about the that sake brand.
Oh God, yes. Yes.
I really think that probably was one of the best episodes that we've ever done.
Oh my God, I gotta go listen to it.
Yeah.
Part of it.
Yeah. So that'll all be going up in the near future, and we really appreciate your support, whatever you can give, and we will continue to talk aimlessly about our lives and our feelings and our concerns about yoga and
feel
other
free
things.
To send us emails or call us to the mat on stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And there will be there are things in the works.
Things.
We'll do a J. We'll do a typical J outro.
Yeah. There's
things in the works. There may be a chance for some events that we've been talking about doing. Okay.
Some things that might be happening.
Is this an ASMR video all of a sudden?
I can't talk about it in detail just yet. Some things are coming down the pipeline that I'm... Okay, the wheels came off, but it was there. And it's done with love, Jay, if you
like. Yes. Jay might be the only person who listens to the end of this podcast. Sometimes I wonder. So anyways, do you have any final words, final musings, final songs to wrap us up with there, Kate?
That's the song from Alice in Wonderland, which has been my babysitter for this last hour.
Oh, fabulous.
He's calling. So no more thoughts.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.